This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Mexico has been in the news a lot lately because of the caravan of Central American refugees that's now on the southern border near Tijuana. During all of this, Mexico has been preparing to swear in a new president, Andrés Manuel López Obrador. He's set to take office on December 1st, and we're going to sit down with an FGCU professor who specializes in Mexican politics to find out how this new administration could change the U.S.-Mexico relationship. But first, e-cigarettes have become increasingly popular over the last 15 years or so. These small handheld electronic devices simulate the feeling of smoking by heating a liquid to generate an aerosol. It's commonly known as vaping. The liquid in e-cigarettes often contain nicotine, but not always. According to health officials, the use of e-cigarettes among teenagers has reached epidemic numbers, and school districts are starting to hold sessions to inform parents and teachers about these devices and the health effects of them. We're joined today by three guests who will help us learn more about these devices. Sarah Thompson, she's a prevention specialist with the School District of Lee County. Sarah, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Also, Kurt Gerke, he is the Director of Health Promotions for the American Lung Association in Florida. Kurt, welcome back to the show.
Yeah, thank you very much.
We're also joined by Steve DeLisi. He is the Assistant Dean and Assistant Professor at the Hazelden Betty Ford Foundation's Graduate School of Addiction Studies. Dr. DeLisi, thanks for your time today.
Thank you very much.
And as always, we invite you to join our conversation. The number to call is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag of GCL. So first, Kurt Gerke, I want to start with you and ask some basic principles about e-cigarettes and vaping. What's the history of these things? How long have they been around, and how do they work?
Good question. They're fairly new on the block, if you will, especially compared to other tobacco products that we're all very familiar with. One of the tough things actually is what a fast-moving train it is, because if you have us in 2 weeks from now, there's probably a new product we might be able to talk about. For example, Juul, which has the biggest share of the market right now, only came out in 2015.
That's a name brand?
It is. That's a different kind of a delivery device, but still in the e-cigarette category. But about a decade or so of people really using them in the U.S. Is what we're looking at for these products.
So what is this liquid that's in it?
That's a good question. Part of the problem is that most products in this country, the Food and Drug Administration would be regulating them, testing them, and able to tell you what is in them. These are not regulated yet, so most of the products are coming from other countries, and it's independent testing that we have at best now. And there's – just to give you an example – last year, there was a study done, and 7,700 different flavors were on the market at that time. So it's overwhelming. It's not like you were in the past looking at a Marlboro cigarette, you know, a Winston or whatever. There's multiple juices that go into these, and they can all have different chemicals. One of the things we found is that many of the products kids are being told they're buying a nicotine-free product. Independent testing is showing that most of them do have nicotine in them. And again, Juul is a specific product that has the biggest share of the market. Every one of their products has nicotine in it now. But it's basically a juice that is heated up. It's aerosolized and then breathed into the lungs by a battery in most of these products that heat it up in some fashion.
So were these marketed? I feel like I recall these being marketed as an alternative to cigarettes and healthier in some ways than smoking cigarettes.
Yes. They have been. Unfortunately, from our studies, we have not, and the Surgeon General would agree with this, they've not been proven to be effective for cessation or safe. Unfortunately, what our data actually shows is that people have meant well to try to quit with them, end up generally becoming dual users. They're still smoking and they're using the e-cigarettes for convenience, if you will, in places that they could not, you know, use a traditional tobacco product. There are great ways to quit, but unfortunately, and it might have looked promising in the beginning, but they have not turned out to be, have delivered on that front.
Dr. DeLisi, I want to turn to you now. How much is known about the health effects of vaping?
Yeah, so, you know, I concur with everything that's just been stated. We don't know a lot in regards to the long-term safety profile of these products because they're relatively new. We do know that some of the products are posted as containing known carcinogens. There's also some of the products that contain trace amounts of lead, but once they are vaporized, the lead content, percent content, increases 25-fold. And certainly when you're talking about access to kids and adolescents who are just developing and their brain is developing, we have significant concerns about exposure to any of those substances. From an addiction standpoint, in addition to working with the graduate school, I've also been a clinician here at the Hazel and Betty Ford Foundation for 14 years as an addiction psychiatrist and addiction medicine physician, and we have seen marked increases in the number of our adolescents who are coming in with addictions to nicotine that started with these e-cigarettes. We know from studies that about 30% of e-cigarette users do start smoking within 6 months of starting with the e-cigarette, and that compares to about 8% of those who are non-e-cigarette users starting to smoke within a six-month period of time. So it clearly is a gateway into using other tobacco products.
Yeah, and using regular cigarettes. But I'm wondering, I mean, Mr. Gerke talked a minute ago about this being kind of a bit of a runaway train. Are we on the front end of what turns out to be a health epidemic in the long run? Because I remember in the 80s talking to my mom who was smoking and yelling at her about it, saying, they know that this is bad for you now. I mean, you didn't know when you were young, but now we know. So,
well, so that's a really an interesting sociologic phenomena that we're seeing within adolescents that we treat at Hazel and Betty Ford. They're communicating to us an understanding that traditional tobacco products, primarily cigarettes, that those are, in quotes, bad for you. But there's a perception that e-cigarettes and marijuana are less bad for you. And so I think that perception of what is, in quotes, safer is driving some of the use of both e-cigarettes as well as cannabis. And that's also rolled into this discussion on e-cigarettes. You can vaporize other products other than what was intended to be used in these products. And we know that the most commonly used substance that's being used in an e-cigarette other than the traditional product is cannabis.
Do you have to buy the cartridges ready-made to put into these e-cigarettes, or do you fill it up yourself? I'm completely clueless.
Yeah, so most of them come with easy-to-use pods, which is also some of the attraction when you're talking about adolescents. I mean, let's be honest. Kids are looking for the most innovative and sexy product to use, and these products are packaged in just that way. They look like something that you would be hip to use, and then you get these pods and that you put in to vaporize. But you can modify the pods, and you can fill the pods with whatever you want to then vaporize. Inhaling vapor into the lungs is the fastest route of administration of a substance into the brain. It's actually seconds faster than using IV or in the vein.
So, Kurt, I'm going to turn back to you. You can refill these things. Where does someone get this liquid product to put into these pods?
Well, I think one of the things that most people in any community in the U.S. could say that it almost seemed like an alien invasion, that one day you were driving by the strip center in your neighborhood and there was a vacant store, and the next week there was an E or a vape shop that popped up. Any of those you can walk into. And I just talked to some kids on a college campus the other day, and they said they even have their own flavors where they'll take the base of something else and make it, oh, we've got a different minty grape. One of the troubles that
minty
we've had –
minty grape.
Well, you would be amazed that I said earlier 7,700 different flavors known, and that was – the study said that was just what we could capture because all these different shops are doing their own things. Young people can even do what's called modifying a vape pipe. With the traditional vape we saw, it became hip to make the biggest cloud of vapor that you could. So you could get the instrument, whatever you bought, whatever device, and you could modify it to do different things, which makes the study in part even different. When I went back earlier to say that we used to know, okay, here's what a Marlboro cigarette is. Now studying these, it's going to be very difficult because there can be different dosage, different products. They can adapt the device that they're using to do it. The one thing that I don't know if I said this clearly, but the Lung Association is very concerned that we are going to lose another generation to the ill effects of tobacco use and nicotine addiction. And the epidemic is a good term that you used earlier. It's blown up. It's amazing. And again, I know you're going to talk to the schools, but you cannot walk in to a school and not see because you said you weren't real familiar with the product. One of the things just the listeners might find interesting, and I'll confess, a year ago if you told me, okay, this is a Juul, and you showed it to me, I would tell you that's a USB flash drive. That's mm-hmm. what it looks like.
Really?
And,
that's right.
So there are – the products have become to where it's very easy to miss. He just mentioned that marijuana, cannabis can be smoked. Very easy to have gotten away, especially early on. You could have done this. It's terrible to say. You could be in church using this and doing whatever, and people wouldn't even have recognized it, much less parents or school officials. It really – it's
adapting. There's no, like, cloud of smoke around you or anything?
Not for Juul. Juul doesn't have the same cloud. Some of them, it's very apparent. If you pull up to a car and it looks like it's Cheech and Chong are in the vehicle,
yeah. mm-hmm.
that's a student that's probably – and I shouldn't say student. That's a person that's adapted and really is going for that big vapor cloud. But some products are just the opposite, where it's
super
made
discreet.
To be. That's it. Discreet's a perfect word.
Wow. Well, so that sounds like a great time to turn to talk to Sarah Thompson as a prevention specialist at the school district of Lee County. Man, that's quite a challenge. These things look like a USB drive and have no actual smoke. You could be sitting there right in the middle of math class or algebra or whatever. Do you see a lot of this happening in the school district? Or are you seeing it proliferate?
What we're seeing, according to administrators, they have told us it's not a distraction. So this is not massive. But there may be many students who are doing this that go undetected. So we're trying to educate our staff members about what the Juul device is
what
and other
for.
Vaping. So they know what to look for.
Mm-hmm.
That the flash drive in their computer may not really be a flash drive, and to ask questions and just to look for that.
Could they be smoking marijuana on these things and not have – I mean, because, you know, marijuana has that telltale smell.
The Juul, they make their own pods for uh-huh. their particular vaping device.
Uh-huh.
There are vaping devices that are specific for cannabis, and they look very similar, the same cartridge. They look like flash drives. Yes, it is very possible. We do know every year the state of Florida does a survey among middle school and high school students throughout the state, and every 2 years we receive results based for each county. The 2016 results for Lee County, Florida showed that 29.4% of Lee County teens in middle and high school reported that they had used some type of vaping device.
That's almost 30%.
Well, in 2018, 34.3% of teens yep. in Lee County reported. So there was an increase there from 2016 to 2018. In 2018, the state of Florida as a whole, teens in middle school and high school, they reported 27.1%. So Lee County was actually – the reporting from teens was actually higher in Lee County than the state of Florida as a whole.
Than the average.
Yes. And so that's why it's very important. So what we're doing in our prevention department, we have put together presentations and information on vaping, e-cigarette devices. And
so this is going to have to be a visual, though, because this is because when kids would sneak off to smoke, they'd come mm-hmm. back smelling like an ashtray. If they sneak off to smoke pot, they smell like it.
Mm-hmm.
But this is really kind of hard to detect unless you have an actual eyeball on it.
There are certain things because of the different flavors, devices. Sometimes a child might have a artificially sweet smell about them
okay.
because of these artificial flavors in there. That can be an issue. Sometimes they have a lot of dry throat issues. They may even have nosebleeds because of the chemicals that they're inhaling. And it creates those problems. But, yes, we're trying to educate. We want to educate our parents. It's very important that we work with our parents to ensure their children's success.
So these are not legal for kids to have anyway, though, right?
Correct.
I mean, are these regulated the way cigarettes are?
It's against the law for minors to have tobacco devices.
But that, as we all know, doesn't usually end up meaning they don't have it.
Well, you know, if you are under 18 and you know someone who's over 18, just
yeah.
like a traditional cigarette, they might buy it for you. There's a lot of ways. If you want it, they can get it. We have to educate them so they can make the better choices and decisions.
So if you're just joining the show today, we're discussing the rise of teen vaping with a panel of experts. I'm joined in studio by Sarah Thompson. She's a prevention specialist with the School District of Lee County. Kurt Gerke, he is the Director of Health Promotions for the American Lung Association in Florida. And on the phone, we're talking with Dr. Steve DeLisi from the Hazelden Betty Ford Foundation. If you're a parent or a teacher and you've seen signs of teens using e-cigarettes, give us a call and tell us about what you've experienced. Join our conversation now at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Or you can find us on Facebook at WGCU Public Media or on Twitter at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So, Dr. DeLisi, where does nicotine addiction fall on the spectrum of addictive substances? I've constantly heard that it's super addictive, like worse than heroin.
Yeah, well, it is not as immediately destructive as heroin, but when you talk about the long-term effects of a tobacco use disorder, that actually is where most of the individuals with an addiction are going to die from a tobacco-related illness. We all are aware of the opioid crisis that has hit this country. 50 to 60,000 people a year are dying from opioid overdoses, but about 500,000 people in this country die related to tobacco use. And it's very difficult to quit. We heard that many of these products were initially thought to be a tool to help someone towards cessation. They're not panning out to be as effective as we once hoped. There are much more effective tools that can be used for that purpose. But tobacco is often, considered that gateway drug to other drug use. It primes the reward pathway in the brain in the same way that other illicit drugs are primed. And so the earlier someone is exposed to any of the drugs of abuse, the higher the risk of developing addiction later in life. And that's the real concern with these products that we're talking about today, is that they are attractive to our teens and adolescents. They're a developing brain, and we know addiction to be a neurodevelopmental disorder that begins early in life. And these are products that are exposing our kids to mood-altering substances earlier in life.
And it seems like in the past there's been success in curbing marketing to teenagers and kids with flavors like minty grape or cherry vanilla. Those things are clearly appealing to young people, and of course in the packaging and the styling and things. But it also kind of appeals to people in their, younger 20s, in the early 20s, early mid-20s. How are people going to be able to go about getting these things regulated so that they're not targeting teenagers as specifically?
Yeah, I think it's these types of discussions, and it's all of us working together to get educated on the risks that we've been talking about today. I firmly believe that we need to help people to understand the risks that are associated, because, again, I go back to when you ask high school and college age kids, what's your primary reason for using e-cigarettes or these vaping products? The number one response they give is that it's safer than cigarettes. So just having hosting these shows is what is needed for us to get the word out and then begin to look at how are we regulating the access to younger kids. The way that the product is packaged and then all of the diversity of these flavors are clearly marketed towards kids and adolescents, and that needs to change.
And then turning back to Kurt Gerke with the American Lung Association in Florida, I wanted to ask you, another way that people were able to start getting some sorts of regulation on cigarettes was the secondhand smoke issue, and that you're not only smoking and damaging your own lungs, but you're hurting people around you. Do these vape cigarettes or these e-cigarettes, have they had any impact on other people other than the people that are using them? Is there a secondhand,
Yes. Yes, in short. And again, I think one of the things that the American Lung Association prides itself on not being knee-jerk, you know, to we really want to wait for the data to come out before we can say definitively. And really, there's always been a lag time of close to like 20 years before you can really say, okay, this causes this. But all of the early reports, we've learned so much from tobacco, is that there are definitely chemicals that in California right now, I went on Juul's website last night, they have to list two chemicals that are known by the state of California as being cancer-causing that are not only in the vape that you breathe, but when you're using any of these devices, especially the ones with the big vapor cloud, you're not only getting the stuff that's coming off of the device, but what the person's breathing in and out still has the chemicals. So we're very alarmed at just knowing – it's funny. This sounds simplistic maybe, but I speak to a lot of school kids and I say, you know, your body was designed – every hair on your body needs oxygen, every bit of it. And your lungs are designed to breathe oxygen in your body to send it to your bloodstream. Anything else you're putting into your lungs is detrimental. It's dangerous. And it may be that people keep saying, well, these are not as bad as cigarettes. That's the only thing that's really on the table. It's not that they're not going to be bad and there's going to be ill health effects for those using it and from the secondhand part of it. But just to wrap that up, one of the challenges, again, will be there's so many variations of what is in these and what is coming off of them and how kids are adapting them and cannabis can be aerosolized that you're talking about a product that you could be breathing something very different from one person vaping next to you compared to the next person you might run into, which will all make the studies, you know, that 20 years down the road that I mentioned is going to be interesting because for tobacco, when women started smoking in mass in this country, lung cancer was not considered to be even a female cancer. It's now the number one cancer killer of women in this country. Not all of it's tobacco related, but you know, I talked to a doctor that said when my father started practicing medicine, if they asked him what is lung cancer, he would have started by saying it was a male disease. But I think we're going to see – unfortunately, I think we may be looking at some new diseases that we don't even anticipate.
Well, they're already having nosebleeds. I mean, we were just – Sarah sitting here talking about kids showing up with nosebleeds. And and what – this is not stuff that's tested? I mean, people are being sold this to inhale this and put it into their lungs, and it's not been tested.
No, not by our government. One of the things the Lung Association actually sued the Food and Drug Administration in March to try to force them to regulate, oversee these products and start testing what's in them.
And they don't because you're not eating it?
I think, and this is a simplistic, and maybe the doctor can address this, but I think they've said, well, we're not a food, we're not a drug. You know, it's kind of fallen between the cracks in a way, but they're to me, and for the American Lung Association, it's long overdue that the FDA regulates and steps in and just allows people to know what they're really getting because truly, products are not being tested. There's no list of ingredients. One of the things that is shocking is that a lot of kids will use these and say, okay, I'm not using nicotine. I'm not even telling my friends, but I don't want to get addicted to nicotine. And then independent tests are showing that these products that are supposedly nicotine-free do have nicotine in them.
So they're just thinking they're having like a little vape of some cherry vanilla flavored thing or whatever and looking cool among their friends, but it does have nicotine in it.
Right. So we need to regulate as the bottom line. People do need to know, even so they can make a choice for adults that choose to use this. We've talked a lot about kids, but they even deserve to know, okay, you know what you're getting in this because there are some things that we know are harmful to be aerosolized and breathed into your lung that have been proven to be cancer causing. People have a right to know that that's what they're doing.
Dr. DeLisi, can you clarify a little bit why this isn't being tested? Do you know?
No, I really don't have a full understanding of that. I understand it in the way that we just heard that it falls between and within the gaps. It's not considered a medication. It's not considered a supplement. It's not considered a food. And has been, you know, there's been a lot of lobbying to keep it out of the regulation of the FDA. But again, as we've said repeatedly, most all of the products do contain nicotine, and we do recognize and have a scientific basis to state that nicotine is an addictive substance, and at that point, it should be regulated because of that addictive substance. And it's a highly addictive form of nicotine that are in these products.
Is more addictive than other nicotine?
Well, that's a really excellent question, and it's a question that's been asked on a number of occasions over the past couple of years. because it is a different type of nicotine. It's a nicotine salt. That is the type of nicotine that evolved into the primary nicotine type in cigarettes. And the understanding is that it's quicker to be absorbed and less harsh, and therefore a more intense and quick high. But there's been no study that has looked at the freebase nicotine versus nicotine salt in those individuals who are not already addicted to nicotine. And you could imagine, for obvious reasons, that would be a difficult study to really do in a controlled setting, because you wouldn't want to be exposing people to something that's potentially addictive and they weren't addicted to begin with.
Yeah. And I want to ask, we've been talking about nicotine a lot, but I want to ask about the difference between the marijuana. And we've, you know, seen marijuana becoming a medical approved for medical use with a lot of people, and a lot of people pushing the vaping as opposed to actual marijuana. Is there any comparison mm-hmm. about the safety between actual marijuana flowers and buds versus this vape concoction?
No, there really isn't, because of the lack of research in general around most cannabis products. What I would say to that, though, is you're likely able to get to a higher concentration of THC using the vaping techniques. Mm-hmm. And that brings up a lot of concerns when you're talking about adolescents. The higher the THC concentration, the more addictive it is, as well as the more the increased risk of causing psychosis. Higher percent THC has more risk of causing psychosis in people.
Well, it kind of sounds like the Wild West. I want to turn back to Sarah Thompson again, because I'm sure that there might be parents out here who are listening and not aware or very familiar with this. And if it's common, up to 30-some percent of kids in the Lee County School District have tried this, could you give parents a couple of points that they need to keep an eye out for? What things are you smelling for and looking for?
Well, as I said before, the artificially sweet smells, that's going to be important.
Are you talking like the smell of like a cherry
candy,
scented car freshener?
Kind of like the sweet candies. If you smell
a Luden's cough drop,
something, yeah, but very artificially sweet. So It's not just smelling strawberry; it's smelling a very strong artificial. It's just a little stronger,
like old school lip gloss.
Maybe like that.
Okay.
That would be probably a good example. I mentioned the nosebleeds. They're more thirsty. Also, because of the nicotine and the nicotine addiction, they may become more irritable if they're not around or they're not getting their nicotine fix.
Like that urgency to get out, get away and be by themselves for a second and then come back all fine.
Right. You think of a traditional smoker who's heavily addicted to nicotine. Sometimes they become more irritable when it's getting close for them to go out to have a smoke. Teens may be doing the same thing if they're around their parents and they don't feel they can safely vape. Without getting caught, they may become more irritable than their normal. So things of that nature, they need to look for these flash drive. Not all the vaping devices look like flash drives, but the Juuls, which have the bulk of the market, and some of the other cartridge devices, they do look like flash drives. They can be plugged into a computer. The Juul device itself looks like a flash drive, but it's much longer.
Mm-hmm.
So it's probably about, 4 inches long or so? So it's longer than your typical little flash drive.
Okay.
They need to ask questions. They need to talk to the students or their teens about this, about these different dangers. And we also, as a school district, we offered a parent presentation earlier this month, and we have two coming up in December. If parents want to come, Varsity Lakes Middle School on December 3rd, Monday evening from 6 to 7 in their media center. We're going to be doing a presentation for parents on the dangers of tobacco and vaping. And then on Tuesday, December 11th, also from 6 to 7, in the Media Center at Paul Lawrence Dunbar Middle School, we're going to also have a presentation.
Where can people find that information if they didn't scratch it down while they were in their car driving?
LeeSchools.net.
Okay, LeeSchools.net, if you missed any of those dates and times. Kurt, I want to ask, do you have any additional thoughts before we let you go? We're about out of time.
Yes, just real quickly. Thank you for having us, first of all, and for the discussion. These products, you'll probably find this interesting in your listeners, they've adapted quickly to where there's even some other products that are being designed to be used with them. And one of the more fascinating ones, just to tell you how hard it can be for parents to know, is there's a company called Vapeware. And the other day I went on their website and they have what looks like a traditional hoodie jacket, but the little drawstring that would be hanging there, you can hook your vape up to it and actually breathe through the drawstring. It's fashions that are designed to use these products, you know, and not get detected. And so there's even companies that are doing those kind of things. It's fairly fascinating. I had to smile at a few things like that. But parents really are challenged. I mean, going right directly to them and say, listen, have you heard about these? Are you using them? It may be that old-fashioned, straight-on conversation and to educate themselves so they can say, listen, because most kids think it's harmless. They think this is fun and games. It's good candy flavors. You know, I'm doing bubble gum or cotton candy flavored. What's the danger? And the truth is there is danger. And kids really, like the doctor mentioned earlier, nicotine addiction. We do clinics for people that want to quit called Freedom from Smoking. And more people come to our clinics and say something along the lines of, not that I'm afraid I'm going to get lung cancer. They say, I'm tired of being a slave, is the word a lot of them use to this product. I am the one standing in the alley because I have to get my nicotine fix when it's raining. And I would just say, young people, you really do not want a life. We know that part very well, what nicotine addiction is like. And they do not want that for their kids' future.
Exactly. All right. And Dr. DeLisi, do you have any final thoughts before we let you go?
Sure. Yeah. And again, Julie, thank you for creating this forum. I think that the education, getting the information to people, in particular parents, is critically important. Prevention is the goal here. For every individual teen that we can prevent starting to smoke, that reduces substantially the risk of going on to other tobacco use disorders and the consequences of tobacco use. So really helping families to know the kids are using this, kids are perceiving this as safe, and one of the other reasons why kids say that they use these vaping products is because their friends are using it. So just knowing that your kids' friends are also using, that's an influence, and we need the parents and adults to be a more persuasive, educated source of information for our teens and adolescents.
All right. Well, thank you so much. But that's all the time that we've got for this part of the show. But I want to thank my guest, Sarah Thompson. She's a prevention specialist with the School District of Lee County. Sarah, thanks so much for coming in today.
Thank you for having us here.
We also talked with Kurt Gerke. He is the Director of Health Promotions for the American Lung Association in Florida. Kurt, thanks to you as well.
Thank you very much.
Also, Dr. Steve DeLisi, he's assistant dean and assistant professor at the Hazelden Betty Ford Foundation's Graduate School of Addiction Studies. Dr. DeLisi, thanks for your insights. I really appreciate your time.
And thank you for this forum. Really appreciate you opening your airways to us.
And also, when we return, Mexico's new president will officially take office on December 1st. The former governor of the Mexican state of Tabasco and former mayor of Mexico City has promised big changes, but can he implement them once he assumes power? And how will his administration change the U.S.-Mexico relationship? We're joined by an FGCU political science professor who follows Mexican politics to get some insight on that next. I'm Julie Glenn, and you're listening to Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.